Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, a podcast that'll be bringing you each and every single week live, where I will talk about whatever it is that may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, fresh socks and jocks, music, movies, muesli, and everything in between, and I never leave out the talking powder. Welcome, guys. I'm here today in the Dynamo's Castello, where I've got a very special guest, Ian the Dynamo Kelly. That's right, it's me, it's myself, on the third episode ever of Dynamo's Dozen. I'm talking with myself. Now, I've got a lot to talk about today. Past 2 weeks have been pretty insane. One thing that I've learned over the past week in particular, and I've realized that this is an actual fact, that man flu is actually a form of voodoo created by none other than the feminist gods. That's correct. Somebody created this horrible, horrible illness just to mess with us, and it's not good. I've been laid out since last Friday. I went out last Friday for my uncle's 50th birthday and had myself a couple of beers. I went out with the lovely queen of my life, and we had many drinks, four in total. I'm getting really bad in my old age, but I just noticed a horrible shiver all the way up the back, which every man knows this. It's just a horrible coldness that comes all the way up your back, and it just starts infesting inside your body. Now, Saturday morning for me was really interesting, because I got up to watch Soccer AM, which I always do on a Saturday. I got up to make the breakfast, which I always do. Eggs, bacon, sausages, some brown bread. All done on the George Foreman, of course. Healthy option, of course. And I just noticed I didn't have it in me. I just didn't have the energy. I wanted to have a beer at around, I think, 1 o'clock, because I wanted to watch some football. Opened up a can of beer. First sip, I knew it was game over. It was gone. It wasn't happening. So what I did was I literally got on my beautiful ass couch. I put my Jon Snow rug over me, which it's a big fluffy blanket, to be honest, which is like a cape. And I just laid out, and I didn't get up off that couch until this morning. So needless to say, I'm not 100% today, but I'm 95%. And I'm back. And to all you guys out there that are suffering with man flu, you've got my vote. I love you guys, and I hope you're okay. But like I said, let's get off that. I've got a lot to talk about today. I'm going to start with the big, big, big fight that happened between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. We talked about it on this podcast. I talked about it with my last guest, Davey Lockman. I also talked about it with Carl King Woe, my first guest. And, well, they were wrong. I was right. Sorry, guys. But, no, all joking aside, let's be honest. A lot of people thought that this was going to be a bit of a circus act. In my opinion, I think that was wrong, and I think it was a little bit offensive to the two guys that were involved. I don't think it was a circus act. I think it was what it was. I think it went the way it was always going to go. All our Irish fans that went over had lots of fun. They're probably broke as a joke right now. Probably owed a credit union a couple of grand at least. Let's just say that. But nonetheless, they go over, and they really do make their presence known. And I think Irish fans in general, we just get behind anything Irish, you know. We won't speak about that crock of shit that we saw during the week against Serbia, because that's exactly what it was. But in terms of the Floyd and Conor fight, it went the way I expected it. I was one round off. Could have won a lot of money, in fact, if it had been the round that I expected, which was 9. But I'm not going to cry over spilt milk. I thought it was good. I thought Conor gave a great account of himself in the early rounds. I don't think he won as many rounds as a lot of people, you know, thought he did. I don't think he won all three rounds in the first. I think he won the first. I think he won the second. I think the third was pretty even. I think the fourth was pretty even. And then I think in the fifth, that's when Floyd started trying to... He kind of try and engage him a little bit more, in the sense that he kind of... You know, he was looking for those openings that kind of was leaving, and then he decided to kind of take advantage of that. Being honest with you, though, like I said... Those first three rounds from Conor, I thought were really impressive. I mean, he hit Floyd a lot more than Floyd's been hit in the last 5 to 6 years, in my opinion. I think that the stats tell you that. But you know, the way I look at it was, it was a good contest. I thought the ref stopped it at the right time, to be honest with you. I thought Conor was getting a little bit punch drunk. I think he wanted to keep going, because that's exactly what he would want to do as a badass fighter and the kind of lion heart that he is. But I think it went the exact way that most of us really expected it to go. Definitely boxing fans expected it to go anyway. But yeah, it was phenomenal. I mean, they'd done some amazing numbers. I think they broke records pay-per-view wise. I don't think they broke the gate record. I think that still stands to Manny and Floyd. I don't think they broke that. But either way, I'm not here to talk about the money that they made from it or they invested in it. I'm here to talk about the actual fight, and I think the fight was good. I had some people over, and we all enjoyed it. It was a spectacle. It was something that gained their interest from the get-go, and it's something that a lot of people bought into, and even the people that said they wouldn't buy into, they're lying motherfuckers, because they bought into it, and they bought the fight, and they enjoyed it, and that's all that matters. But getting off the Conor and Floyd fight, I'm going to stick with boxing. I'm going to talk about what could possibly be the fight of the decade between Golovkin and Canelo. This is something that I was looking forward to a lot more than Conor and Floyd anyway. Been a huge boxing enthusiast, as you know. I think this one really could be the fight of the decade if it goes the way I'm hoping and the way I expect it to go. I guess I'll start by breaking it down a little bit. Not that I'm an expert, but I'm going to try and give you my thoughts on it. We'll start with the numbers. We've got Golovkin. He's got 37-0. 37 wins, no losses, with 30 knockouts. We've got Canelo with 49 fights, one draw and one loss, with 34 knockouts, which is absolutely phenomenal, because Canelo is only 27 years old. And Golovkin's actually 35 years old. As Canelo actually has the youth on his side here in this fight. The reach is pretty much the same, give or take half an inch. They're both 70. Well, Canelo's 70 and a half for what the half is worth. And Golovkin is 5'10", with Canelo standing at 5'9". So it's not a huge difference. Where the big difference comes in for me is that Canelo actually looks at the moment like he's done some bodybuilding. His new physique looks pretty. It looks pretty. It looks pretty. But it's also pretty intense, in the sense that he's got a lot more beef and a lot more muscle and a lot more chiseled for this fight than he has done for any other fight before. In fact, he's always been around the low 170 mark, weighing in about 170 pounds, and he's up at the 185 to 190 mark at the moment, and has to cut to 160 for the fight, which causes me a little bit of concern for Canelo. Now, these weight problems never, you know, they should never be the be all and end all of your analysation of the fight, but for me it is, particularly with Canelo. Not that he's not able to go to the distance, because he has done many a time. But I think Golovkin, in particular, you know, I think he had 11 out of his last fights. He's had one knockout. I could be corrected on that, but he's a lot more, what's the word? He's a lot more used to the 12 rounds than Canelo would be. And at 35, he's going to look to control that fight a little bit more to make it go 12 rounds. Whereas Canelo's going to be looking for that knockout. With that muscle and with that body mass that Canelo's putting on, that tells me that he wants to actually finish the fight early. So we will see. It is Saturday the 16th. It's in the Las Vegas T-Mobile Arena. Pretty impressive structure. One man will leave as the WBC, IBF, IBO, World Middleweight Champion. He will hold the crown of all those badass belts. And to be honest with you, I think at the moment, if I was to pick a winner, I'm going to go with Golovkin. And the reason I'm going to go with Golovkin is purely because of the way Canelo is looking at the moment. I think Canelo looks really impressive. I think he looks absolutely phenomenal, in fact. But so does Canelo. Or so does Golovkin, should I say. My bad. There we go. That's a live podcast for you. But Golovkin looks absolutely phenomenal as well. But I think Golovkin, this is nothing new to him in terms of his body weight and how he looks. He always looks good. Whereas I think Canelo's had to try something a little bit different. He wants to come in the bigger man. He wants to come in the stronger man. He wants to come in the heavier man. He wants to come in to knock Triple G out, as does Triple G with Canelo. But I would say that if I was to put money on it, at this moment in time, I honestly do believe that Triple G is going to win. And I think it's going to go the distance. I don't see a knockout. I see some knockdowns. I don't see a knockout. And I'll tell you why when I come back. And I'm back. So yeah, just took a little pee break there. That's the beauty of my live podcast. I can do what I want. So yeah, just going back to what I was saying there about the beautiful, beautiful fight between Golovkin and Canelo, which I personally can't wait for. And I hope you guys are psyched about it too. Just before the break there, I did say that I think Canelo is going to lose. Do I want Canelo to lose? No. I'm kind of with Oscar De La Hoya on this, that I want him to be the golden boy of boxing. I want him to be the future of boxing. I believe he is the future of boxing at 27 years old. I don't think this loss against Golovkin would hurt him in any way, shape, or form. But what I'll do is I'll stop talking about what I believe will happen. I'll give you guys some odds if you want to go down and throw some quids on this one. So we've got Golovkin to win is 4-6 at the moment. Canelo to win is 14-9. The draw is 25-1. Not a bad outside bet. Throw a tenner on that. 250 quid for yourself. If we go methods, Golovkin to win by KO, TKO, or disqualification, you've got 13-8. This is a nice one. Alvarez to win by KO, TKO, or disqualification, 10-1. Well worth the shout. Doesn't mean the round, just the decision. Not the decision in the fight, but the method of victory, 10-1. Golovkin by decision, 7-2, whereas Alvarez by decision, 21-10. To go the distance, if you wanted to go the distance, which I believe it will do, personally, you've got 7-2 for Golovkin. You've got 21-10 for Alvarez. If you do believe it will go the distance without picking a fighter, you've got yes, 5-6, or no, 11-10. So there's not really much money to be made in that one. My personal favorite when I'm doing a bet would be the rounds. So 1-3, you've got 7-1. That's for either fighter. 7-1. Not a bad bet. Not a bad bet. I mean, we saw what Canelo done to, you know, to Amir Khan. I know Golovkin is an Amir Khan, and I know Canelo is not Amir Khan, but these boys have both got power. So 7-1 isn't a bad show if you fancy it been done in 1-3. 4-6, 9-2. Rounds 7-9, 4-1. Rounds 10-12, you've got 13-2. not bad numbers there, to be honest, which is definitely worth it's definitely worth a shout there. But I think, like I said, I think Canelo looks a bit like a bodybuilder at the moment. He's carrying around a lot of weight. He's going around at 180 to 195, I think, at the moment. Whereas Golovkin is staying around the 170 mark. He's 35. He knows exactly what's got him to the dance. I think Canelo should have stuck with what's got him to the dance. It's the only reason I'm going against Canelo in this fight. I think he's had to put too much muscle on. And I think it's going to be a big, big drop for him to get down to 160. But look, as we've seen before, in fact, as we saw with Floyd and Conor, you know, Floyd was weighed in a lot lower than people expect him to do and thought that Conor was going to be the bigger man, but it definitely went in Floyd's favour there. If you look at the last fights, Golovkin floored Jacobs, proving he's still got it. He knocked Jacobs out in his last fight, and Alvarez went the distance with Julio Cesar Chavez. So it's really, really so hard to call. I'm just going with my gut that I believe Golovkin is going to win, just based on what I've been seeing in the recent days. But hey, who knows? Who knows? And may it be a phenomenal, phenomenal fight, which I think it will be. I do believe, and I hope, that it's going to be the fight of the decade. So, someone asked me a question earlier as well. What has the Dynamo been listening to do on his iPod? Music-wise, let me look. Simple Minds is a band I've been listening to a lot of recently. In particular, the new Gold Dream album. Simple Minds, I'm going to sound like an old man, which I am right now. I'm in my early 30s, so I'm an old man. Papa used to make me listen to Simple Minds, so that's a band I've been listening to a lot of. For all you guys that don't know Simple Minds, you really should, because you're an asshole if you haven't heard of them. Everybody knows The Breakfast Club, especially from the 80s, one of the best films ever, and definitely, definitely one of the best songs from any film, Don't You Forget About Me. Don't you, you know it. They got an acoustic album that came out only recently enough, where they have all the greatest hits on it, from Don't You Forget About Me, See the Lights, Waterfront. Awesome, awesome album. Jim Kerr, big Celtic fan as well. Awesome singer, awesome band. Check it out. What else was I listening to? In fact, just before I'd done this podcast, I was listening to some Black Sabbath, a band that is pretty much predominantly a regular on any playlist that I put together for myself. Black Sabbath are always a band. But one for you metal guys, and I'm sure most of my metal friends will know of this band, Alabama Thunder Pussy. Definitely one of my favorite albums of all time, Open Fire, with the great singer that is Kyle Thomas. In my opinion, Kyle's the best metal vocalist of all time. I've always had that opinion. But three songs in particular, if you're looking for something to listen to that you haven't heard before, and you haven't heard Alabama Thunder Pussy before, I would recommend listening to the album Open Fire, but listening to three songs in particular from that album. One is Void of Harmony. Beautiful, beautiful little song that's only about three and a half minutes long, if even, with beautiful melodic riffs, and the vocals in it are just absolutely phenomenal. Another one of my personal favorites from that album is The Beggar. Again, Kyle just absolutely knocks it out of the park with this song. I think it's actually one of my favourite songs I've listened to over the last year, even though I've known it for about 10 years. It's just, I don't know, there's something about it that's I don't know, it touches me. It makes me happy. I like it. And then, of course, Words of a Dying Man. This is a song that, in my opinion, should have been a hit in any metal chart or any rock chart. Take away metal, actually, just rock chart in general. Coyle's vocals on this just absolutely knock it out of the park. It's a touchdown. It's a goal. It's a TKO. It's a submission. It's everything. So yeah, Alabama Thunder Pussy. I've been listening to those three bands a lot recently. Looking forward to the new U2 album, I think. I hope. I won't divulge too much into it. I think I'm going to like it. I don't know if I'm going to like it. Probably not. But there you go. That's what I've been listening to recently. Another question I got was, what movies / TV shows am I looking forward to, and what have I been watching? Well, like I said at the start of the show, I've been laid out sick for the past week, so I've got the chance to watch a lot of TV / movies. The movie that I'm most looking forward to at the moment has to be It. Yes, capital I, capital T, It. I'm afraid of clowns beyond belief. Have been since I was a kid, still am as an adult. My father was the same, my brothers are the same, we are scared shitless of clowns. Not scared of human beings, I'm scared of fucking clowns. I think the new It looks, if I'm able to take away my fear of clowns and just look at it for what it is, I think it looks absolutely phenomenal. I think even the music in particular, that I've seen from the adverts and from the little snippets of the movie that I've seen, it looks pretty intense. I think it's a bit of a throwback to the 80s, what they're doing. They're almost making they're taking what the first movie brought to the table, and they've turned it up to 11. And what I felt in particular was the little doom, 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 doom. It's almost like the Finn Balor music, those little creepy bits of music that come in between that make you go boom, boom, boom. You know, something's about to happen. I think there's going to be a lot of those moments in this movie. I don't think it's going to let any of us horror fans down. I'm really looking forward to that, I gotta say. TV shows. I obviously want to speak about Game of Thrones, but I don't want to speak too much about what happened so much as what I feel. What I mean by that is that there's a lot of you guys that probably still haven't seen it, and there's a lot of you guys that have seen it. I think season 7 knocked it out of the park. I think the last episode had absolutely everything in it, but not everything at the same time. And what I mean by that is, me as a fan, I went into that episode expecting everything, and I got nothing, but I still got everything. And by everything I mean, it set up the next season to the point where I can't wait. I gotta wait 2 years, but I can't wait. I gotta go back and watch it from the first season again, just to fill that void. So they've left a gap in people's lives there, whereby you're gonna be going, I can't live without this. And that's how I feel. But it gave me nothing in the sense of that I didn't see the big battle that I wanted to see and that I hoped I'd see, but it wasn't the right time. Slow build. I love it. I absolutely love it. Game of Thrones, the best show of all time. Fact. Here we go. House of Cards. That's the show I've been catching up on since I was out sick. I had got up to season 3 a number of years ago, before I met the Queen. And I hadn't watched it since. So I started back from season 3. And I've got up to the last couple of episodes now of season 5. What a show. What a show. All I will say is, Frank Underwood is a character that has to go down in history as one of the best TV / movie characters in. There is no doubt that he has to go down as one of the greatest characters of all time. you know, his acting is just unbelievable. Plays the heel to a T. I think anybody that's looking to be disliked in wrestling and wants to look at, for example, if you look at facial expressions, you look at body movements, you look at, you know, words that he uses and stuff like that, I think Frank Underwood is the ultimate heel, but yet the most sympathetic heel. And by that, I mean, he's a character that you hate, but yet you want to, the more you watch him, the more you kind of sympathize with him, in the sense that you want to actually see the character grow and continue to live. You don't want to see him get shot just quite yet. It's a similar dynamic, not the exact same, but a similar dynamic to Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones. You watch Jaime Lannister in the early Thrones, and you want him to just die. You want him to just get killed. But then as he goes on and on, you start kind of feeling something for the character. And I think that kind of reminds me of the Frank Underwood character. I think it's phenomenal. What else have I been watching? Bore y'all's asses. World War II in Colour. It's actually on Netflix at the moment. It's a full documentary for you. Those of you guys and gals that don't particularly know anything about World War II, which is like me, before last Friday. There's a series on Netflix called World War II in Colour, which is literally all about World War II, basically. But it shows you from the very first episode, it shows you how it started, how Hitler came to be Hitler, what drove him, how the Nazi political party started, when he was in prison and he wrote Mein Kampf, you know, how you know what drove him, what caused that hate, and how he came to be in power. And also then that 3 years in between when he was in power and he was actually quite subdued and wasn't looking for a war, to when he became unsubdued and started looking for a war. And it shows you literally absolutely everything from when that time frame, you know, began. It was absolutely, I love it. I still haven't finished it yet. I'm quite engrossed in it at the moment. I recommend anybody who's looking for something just on a Sunday while you're sitting back with a hangover, check it out. World War II in Colour. It's absolutely unbelievable. And then finally, I started watching Tin Star last night, which was a pretty good show. Gotta say, it's not a bad show. It's got Tim Roth in it. Tim Roth's a phenomenal actor, very underrated actor. I won't give too much away, because to be honest with you, give it away to you, it kind of ruins the whole synopsis almost. But it's a revenge type thriller show that I would recommend to anybody, especially an avid kind of slow build fan. Anybody that likes a Breaking Bad or shows like that, then I would recommend it to you guys. It's on Sky at the moment. It's all episodes are up there. I'd recommend all you guys watch that. So, right, what do we got next? Perfect. So, being here by myself, I've got some news at the end of the podcast as well. So just hang on a little bit. I might be boring you here with no guests today. If I am boring you, I'm sorry. I do sound like I'm about to die, but that is because I've just got over a horrible, horrible devil woman, feminist given man flu. So, like I said, bear with me. But I do have some questions from you guys. There were some questions from people that I've had over the past couple of weeks and stuff that they wanted to know. But here's some direct questions that I've got today. I've actually got one here from my first guest, Carl King. Whoa. Carl wants to know, what are your top five favorite Chris Jericho matches in WWE and top five favorite tag team matches from WWE? Okay. Right. I'll start with Jericho. Chris Jericho. One of my favourite wrestlers of all time. In fact, one of everybody's favourite wrestlers of all time. I wrote it down. I've checked it out because I don't want to do it on the fly here and kind of forget anything. But I've wrote it down. My favourite, number one, definitely, is Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 19. Shawn and Chris, on that particular match, knocked it absolutely out of the park. That was the, without a doubt, that was the best match on the card. It was just before Shawn stopped wearing those baggies that I used to hate him wearing, just purely because it didn't seem like Shawn Michaels to me, even though he still had his best matches in them. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But Shawn Michaels, Jericho, WrestleMania 19 would be my number one on that one. Second, I've gone for, this is more of a personal choice, probably a lot of you guys will disagree with me on this, purely because you might be dirt sheet guys and it didn't really kind of, you know, excite you. But anyway, I went for Jericho versus The Rock and Austin in one night in Vengeance in 2001, where he won the Undisputed Championship. Yes, he won the WCW title and the WWF World title in one night. So Vengeance 2001, that's a personal favourite of mine, just purely because I was a big Jericho fan. And getting him to actually see, that moment where he held both titles aloft was pretty special, because you know, that's somebody that I felt had deserved to kind of have a moment like that, especially watching him, you know, from the ECW days and New Japan days. I thought he was an absolutely, you know, that was a great, anybody who likes Jericho and is an old school fan like myself will always hold that moment in high regard. Number three, we're going all WWE matches, don't forget, versus The Rock in Royal Rumble 2002, when he defended the Undisputed Championships. That was a good match too. That was the one where The Rock planted him through the table. Commentary by Jim Ross on that one was in particular enjoyable. I really enjoyed that match. Number four, I went for John Cena in SummerSlam 2005. Really enjoyed that match too. I thought John got made look pretty good in that match too. I think that's where, you know, that's why John Cena is pretty awesome in general. You know, he had that education from guys like Jericho and The Rock, and, you know, not even The Rock, but, you know, I just thought John really kind of done well in that match, and I really enjoyed it. And then number five, I picked versus CM Punk at WrestleMania 28 for the WWE title. The run that those guys had was really, really good, I thought. I thought that the dynamic between Jericho and Punk was really good. Especially when they start bringing the alcohol kind of thing into it. It was so personal. And anybody that was watching that at that time, that may have had any kind of situations in their family life where they may have had addiction from, you know, from either a personal point of view or from a family point of view, I thought that really touched a nerve with a lot of people. And I thought Jericho's heel character in particular really made it so great that it was just unforgettable in my mind, and I thought it was really, really good. Okay, so the tag team matches. Well, number one of my tag team matches in WWE, it's going to be anything between the Hart Foundation and the British Bulldogs. I'm not going to pick a match because they've had so many. They're all on the WWE Network right now, and they're all on YouTube. In fact, some of the house show matches are actually better than any of the pay-per-view matches. So if you look at any of the you know, the old school matches that you'll find on WWE, where you'll find them in Madison Square Garden, or some of the dark matches that they had, all those matches just excited me. In fact, you know, I was born in 84, so when I was growing up, my first kind of introduction to tag team wrestling was actually watching a Hart Foundation versus British Bulldogs match, and that's actually how I got hooked on wrestling, believe it or not. So there you go, those guys. Any of those matches, they're going to be my number one. So I'm not going to pick a date or a particular event. Just watch any British Bulldogs or Hart Foundation match. Number two, I'm going to pick the Steiner Brothers versus Owen and Brett at WrestleFest 94. This match is just pure amateur wrestling at its finest versus, you know, mixed with pro wrestling. The opening exchanges between Brett and Scott are just pretty phenomenal. It's just looking at two quality amateur wrestlers going and just winging it and going on the fly, and I thought it was absolutely, it's something that excites me. That's the kind of wrestling I like to see anyway. Number three, it's another Hart Foundation one, of course. Why wouldn't it be? Because I'm biased. Versus the Demolition at SummerSlam 1990, where the Legion of Doom came down, interfered with the match, and Jim Neidhart shoulder blocked one of the Demolition, and Brett got the roll up. That was a really, really well worked match, I thought. Number four, Canadian Stampede 97, Hart Foundation. That's not just Jim and Brett, by the way. You had Owen Pillman as Davey as well. Versus Austin, Legion of Doom, Shamrock, and Goldust as well. So that was, I don't even need to explain that match. Most of y'all have seen that. And then number five, I picked Chris Benoit and Jericho against Austin and Triple H at Raw 2001. Phenomenal match. Do I even need to talk about it? It was just phenomenal. Okay, another question. John Nesbitt, how do you think Undertaker should retire? Well, John, I think Undertaker should retire as he did at the last WrestleMania, personally. I thought that was the perfect bow out. I thought he handed the reins, two reins, no pun intended. I thought he'd done everything right in that match by not having too physical a match where he hurt himself. I thought that was the perfect bow out for Undertaker, that last WrestleMania just gone. If he does come back and he wants to go again, if he needs a win, I think it should be against someone established. Unfortunately, I thought that would have been against Sting before he got hurt. I don't think it would hurt someone like Sting to lose to Undertaker, or to a guy that's coming back to wrestle the Undertaker. I don't think that would hurt the Undertaker. Whereas I think if he's going to be going over guys that are, that are on the way up, you know, it can hurt and it can help. So, it depends. It depends. I don't think, Undertaker going over Brock Lesnar before he goes out is going to do anything for the Brock Lesnar character. And I don't think it's going to do anything for the Undertaker character. I thought he went out at the right time there at last WrestleMania. But look, we'll see. Undertaker's a phenomenal name within wrestling. So, and finally, Joe Dignan. Joe the Beef Dignan. My man. Who are your favourite top 3 to 5 wrestlers at the moment? I thought about that. I'm going to give you 6. My first 1 and 2, because I can't separate the two personally. I'm going to go between AJ Styles and Finn Balor. You know, Finn Balor for obvious reasons, because he's the man, and he's also, he's got a lot more to give. AJ Styles is just, you know, like the name says, he is phenomenal. His work since he's come to WWE has just been flawless. It's one of the only reasons that I still watch, the early morning stuff on a Saturday and a Sunday just to actually see himself and Finn. On three, I'm gonna go with I'm gonna choose people that I know in this one, because this is about who my favorite wrestlers are and who I like to watch and who excites me. Paddy Morrow is going to be a guy that I'm going to pick as my number three. Paddy Morrow is one of my favorite wrestlers. I've known Paddy since 2002. I've been in the ring with him. I've watched him work. I've watched him. You know, the guy is just, he's a different league to pretty much everyone else in Europe. He's absolutely phenomenal. I think Paddy is somebody that I can watch and just get lost, you know, having been involved in wrestling, you know, knowing exactly like what the inner workings are and stuff like that. I enjoy being able to watch guys that I grew up with and that I, you know, my comrades, and I enjoy them being able to take me on a journey where I don't actually have to watch wrestling as a critique, but watch it as a story and be able to get lost in that story. And Paddy Morrow brings me into that, which brings me into a segue here, where my number four or number five wrestlers would be Sean Brennan and Justin Chape as well. These two guys are the exact same. Sean Brennan is absolutely killing it over in Japan. You know, this guy is just, he's a demon. Sean Brennan was someone that, you know, as I said, I watched as a kid, as a 15-year-old kid that came into the gym and just became everything he wanted to be and more, and he's still doing it. I think Sean Brennan's another guy that can take me on that journey, and Justin Chape can take me on that journey, not just with his in-ring ability, but also with his character ability. You know, I could listen to Justin Chape do a promo all day long. I could listen to him talk all day long about how much he hates this or hates that. He's just an absolute character. But the best bumper I've ever seen as well. Justin Chape will be there. And then the reason I said I'm going to pick six will be because I have to throw Okada into that as well, because Okada is one of my favourite mainstream wrestlers, even though he's not quite mainstream, but he is now in the indie scene. So there you go. Okada would be my number six. So that's all I've got time for this week. I'm sorry you have had to put up with me for over 40 minutes of me talking with a blocked nose and pretty low tempo voice, but this is and has been the third episode of Dynamo's Dozen. I hope that my soft soothing voice might help you go to sleep tonight, but at the same time, don't go asleep before it's finished, because I will take that as a personal insult, and then you'll see the real bad guy. But it's been fun, and we've got some good stuff coming over the next couple of weeks for all you guys that like strange X-Files type stuff and UFOs and all that kind of craziness and stuff, and do you believe aliens are real, whatnot. I've got something special for you in the coming week. My next guest will be none other than Northern Ireland UFO experts that literally they go out of their way to try and get good footage and try and find good evidence, back up what they claim in the world of UFOs, unidentified flying objects. So that's what I'm going to have for you guys next week. And until then, what I will say is, Dynamo, over and out. Sleep well, young chicks and chickens. I love y'all.